Hi everyone, Russ Thomas here from RST Coaching Academy. Welcome to a new episode of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it. Hello there, everybody on Money Talks today. Russ here from RST Coaching Academy, host of Money Talks on Roku channel, on Amazon Fire, a number of audio podcasts, and also on the RST Coaching Academy blog. So today it's my pleasure to introduce a new friend of mine. His name is Robert White. He lives in the suburb area of Denver. And honestly, I can't wait to hear his story because I've read a little bit about him here. And you're going to hear a story, I think, of from rags to riches, back to rags, and hopefully now onto riches. And ultimately, he'll have some advice for you folks to maybe stay away from the rags part and proceed into the riches world. So with that introduction, Robert, welcome aboard. I'll turn it over to you and let's go. Let's hear where you started in poverty and how the heck you got out of that. All right.
Well, thanks, Russ. It's wonderful to be with you and with your listeners. I want to jump forward just briefly in that story. I was, as you know, resident in Aspen, Colorado for about 12 years. A wonderful experience, raised some great kids, I met some wonderful people. Skied 80 days a year and, you know, traveled with the late John Denver and just had an incredibly great experience. And I still love Aspen a lot. In my bio, some versions of my biography, it says that one of the things that I love doing is to speak pro bono for Rotary clubs and other service clubs. I love what they do. I love people coming together to serve our community and make it a better world. So that's a small thing I've done. And I've done it from, in the biography, it says from Aspen to Singapore and a lot of places in between. The Aspen event is what I thought might be interesting for your listeners.
All right.
You know, I met people that were active in Rotary in Aspen, and they said, will you speak? And I said, absolutely, I'd be delighted to. What do you want me to talk about? And we brainstormed that, and they were having attendance problems, and particularly attracting new members of Rotary in Aspen. People are surprisingly busy in that resort town. And so we brainstormed around, and the title that eventually was arrived at was this: how to lose $30 million in 1 year, which was true for me.
Oh,
so,
wow.
That's kind of in that rags to riches to rags to riches continuum of my life. I grew up with a mother who was very angry and violent. In poverty, that's true, and a father who was a drunk. He did work Monday through Friday, but he came home Friday night drunk, stayed drunk for the weekend, and went back to work. In that time, and it explains a lot of my psychology, according to the therapist that I've spent an unfortunate amount of time and money with, is that I only had one conversation with my father in the 14 years that we lived together before he died. And that was motivated by my mother because she didn't know what to do with me at some point. So she forced that conversation. My father was badly damaged person. A lot of really bad things had happened in his life and he didn't handle it well, and retreated into a bottle of whiskey as a way to avoid the pain.
Well, they say life. That hurt people hurt people. And so was the story of his life then, probably. And part of your mom's then, too, with her anger and abuse and that kind of thing. Wow.
Yeah, I've come to a lot of understanding over the years and a lot of forgiveness, which is good for me, quite frankly.
Yep.
And so, but I remember that quite often as a child, that the, what does it say, the month ran out, or the check, the money ran out before the month ran out. And I remember going into the fields and picking kale and dandelion leaves to put with fat back, and that was our food for the last 3 or 4 days of each month.
And this and is the, where this is where you were raised, up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where this happened?
This was before that. I was born in West Virginia, and this happened down there on the river. But at eight years old, I did move to, or my family moved to Green Bay, Wisconsin. My father actually supervised the drilling of the city well that is still in use, still provides most of the water for Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Wow.
And so that's, and I've often said to people that I had a kind of tough early childhood, and maybe till I was 12, but the city raised me. The city was only 50,000 people at that time, and it's roughly double that now. I think the city took care of me. Teachers, friends, families, just the culture of people caring about people. And I got included in that, being cared about. So when I look back on my days in Green Bay, they are mostly quite positive and useful and wonderful. After my father died at 14, my mother and my three younger siblings moved back to the South, and back to Appalachia. And I stayed in Green Bay. And I was enabled to do that, first of all, with the incredible generosity of a friend's family. They had 10 children, and I became number 11. And for the last 4 years of going through high school, the joke was that 10, 11, you know, who cares? That kind of thing. But I got exposed to a real family, people that communicated, that loved each other and showed it. Not everything was perfect, but it was an incredible formative life experience for me. And Michael Shalhoub, my dear friend of now more than 50 years, he and I shared a bedroom and that life together. In high school, Russ, first of all, it was formed a lot by getting my first job in radio at 14 as a control engineer. But by the time I was 17, I had the highest rated radio show in the state of Wisconsin, doing a top 40 radio DJ job.
What year was this?
That would have been 1959.
Oh, my, you're even older than I am. So you're a child of the late 50s and through the 60s, like me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Awesome.
So that job in radio, first of all, gave me something that I love to do. It gave me a distinction with my classmates. One of the things that it added to was that I was selected by my classmates, 300 classmates, as most likely to succeed. And in that year, at 17 years old, I also made more money than my father had ever made and supported my family at a distance.
Wow.
So, you know, that people talk about growing up fast, and I think that was kind of true for me.
Right.
So pretty independent.
I would say, you know, the way you started out with your mom and your dad, and both the, I guess you could say, dysfunctional aspects of family life, it's a miracle that you didn't turn out that same way. I understand that a lot of children of alcoholics become that themselves. One of the things that helped you was the forgiveness aspect, I would say, because you were no longer harboring the bitterness of what had happened to you. And then obviously the support that you got from other people helped see you through all that whole mess. And that's just short of, you know, nothing short of a miracle in your life. That's really great.
No, I'm very blessed, Russ, and thank you for calling that out and putting that right out there. The story has some hiccups in it, and one of them was that, you know, at 17, I made a lot of money. I was well known in northeastern Wisconsin. Really amazing experience for me, a healing experience for me in many ways. I graduated number 6 out of those 300 students. And I remember calling my mother, and back in those days, a long distance phone call was a big deal.
Yeah.
But I got her on the phone and I said, "Mom, I was chosen most likely to succeed. I graduated number 6. And the first words out of her mouth were, "Why weren't you number 1?
Oh, gee.
You know, so that's, and actually I tell that story because it's indicative of the atmosphere that she created around her of being uber critical.
Yeah.
Years later, I write a book called Living an Extraordinary Life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very nervous about it when it was released. You know, how will people respond? You know, a book is a very public thing. It puts your ego out there right on the line.
You can't retract it very well either, can you?
No, you got to stand behind it. And one of the things that happened was some people that I really respect really liked it. Ken Blanchard, the guy that wrote all those wonderful books and a real genius around organizational development, loved the book. He endorsed it. He bought a bunch of copies for his friends and family. And people liked that. And then I'd find people saying, "Oh, I love your book. And I want to buy 50 copies," stuff like that. And I just felt wonderful. But people started saying, "I loved your book, but I was somewhat disappointed." And of course, I would say, "Well, what disappointed you?" And they'd say, "The book is not about you and your extraordinary life." And I'd say, "No, it's about our work and graduates of our program and how they interacted with our work." So there's a lot of first person stories there about the work.
Uh-huh.
But for many years, Russ, what I didn't reveal is that one chapter was about me. It didn't say that in a book, but I'll reveal that secret, which is the book is called, or the chapter is called, "The Most Dysfunctional Belief That You Can Hold Is You Are Not Enough." I am not enough. That one's about me. And that came from that kind of patterning from mom and from dad, you know, and the way I grew up. So even though I responded to that in two ways, number one is I'll never be poor again. I don't know if I ever languaged it back in those days, but I now see that that's what drove me. And the second part of it was, I'll show you. You know, I'll prove to you that I'm enough, even though I don't feel it inside me. So I spent the next 10 years until I was 27 years old making my classmates wrong. I had a young marriage and divorce. I felt horribly guilty about that. I had 3 heart attacks at 19, 21, and 23, which meant I didn't finish college. Felt bad about that. I was failing in my little sales business and felt guilty about that. And at 27, a friend of mine went out to California and did one of the early human potential movement seminars. He was in a similar business to mine. He came back. My business stayed flat, struggling. His took off.
And what was your business at the time?
Yeah, a little sales business selling skincare on a party plan. So, you know, you recruit a bunch of women and they go out and arrange these parties. But I was late on payroll. All of that kind of stuff about business failure. So I went to this little 4-day program with arms crossed, eyes crossed, legs crossed, negative, just to make my friend wrong. because of his enthusiastic endorsement of that program, which was called Mind Dynamics, MDI. And I went there negative and cynical, and in that 4 days changed my life for the better. So,
you know, there's nothing like a mindset reset, is there?
Yeah, I got to see things that other people could see about me, but I couldn't see it. You know, I've spent 23 years of my working life abroad in Asia, and I've studied Zen Buddhism a little, enough to, I guess, be dangerous. But one of the Zen sayings that I love is that fish don't describe water very well. Whatever you're in, you don't see it. And so, you know, that's the value of trainings, of coaching, of mentoring, is that other people can see things about you in terms of negative patterns that you have and the predictable outcomes of that, but also your strengths and the gifts that you are to the planet and to your family, to your community.
And you know, we don't see the forest for the trees because we're just right there. And that, it, going back to your point about, you know, why people need a coach, need a mentor, good deal, even if a person is not necessarily in business, just for life. That's why there's people out there that call themselves life coaches. Well, I call myself an individual and business coach, so I guess you could get into the life part of it too. But my coaching revolves around business and how to make a business better. And that's the thing, is a lot of people don't see the need for that, right? They're just stumbling along and they're wondering why they're such a mess, but it's just right in front of them, and they can't see past themselves, or they can't see past their situation. So good for you that you've acquired that and are able to market that.
Well, I had a fantastic experience. In that training, there is not one word about money or success. It's all about you and your potential and what can happen if you get your head right, if that mindset shifts to one of abundance and potential. My income tripled the following week. That's being too ambitious. The following year, Russ, my income tripled. And the year after that, it went up 10 times.
And that was in the same skincare program.
Yes.
With still doing the house parties.
Yes.
So did that mean that you were able to book that many more times parties, or that you were able to sell that much more product to, say, a current level of parties? You know what I'm, understand me?
Got it. And look, what I got from the seminar is I got myself out of the way. I got my doubts, my fears. A big part of it was taking personal responsibility for all of my life. And what that led to is, this is might sound a little arrogant, but it's my language. I became more attractive to people, which meant my recruiting increased tenfold.
Okay.
And I also started teaching others about how to do what I was doing.
Perfect.
And they paid me for that, or indirectly through commissions. I sold that business in that third year. I moved to New York City, and I became a contract sales trainer and manager. And I went from managing 31 people directly to 850. And I realized that the methods I used with 31, which was basically interview, touch all 31 of them every week. You can't do that with 850. So I started doing weekend seminars. And in those seminars, I recommended to people that they go through the Mind Dynamics class.
Sure.
And I had the help of the local New York City Mind Dynamics instructor in doing that. And I enrolled over 400 people into the Mind Dynamics training. And I didn't know anything about the content. I just knew it was good for me. Uh-huh. I didn't understand how they worked their magic. And I didn't know who founded the company. I knew nothing about it. I certainly didn't get paid for doing it. Uh-huh. I did it because I found out that when those people went through that training, my results went up. And it was a totally selfish gesture.
Oh, wow. And so did you pay the tab for these people to go? Did the company pay the tab, or did they spring it for themselves?
They sprung it for themselves.
Okay.
In the original group back in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I helped a few people that were in my organization.
Uh-huh.
You know, I would pay half and in some case all of their tuition.
Uh-huh.
One day I got a phone call, and this very courtly British gentleman introduced himself as the founder of Mindynamics and chairman of their board. And he told me that he had heard about me, that he appreciated my support, blah, blah, blah. And would I like to come out to California to meet him? And I got to fly first class for the first time in my life at his expense. So I flew out to California, and 10 days later, I was president of Mindynamics.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, running the business of that business.
This was a job interview, wasn't it?
It was a job interview.
Yeah.
But he was clever enough to not say that.
Uh-huh.
I took a 70% pay cut.
Oh.
To do that.
Oh, wow.
I did get a promise if I hit some targets of any car that I wanted. And of course, as a young guy, you know, that's a great promise.
Oh, yeah.
That's a close.
Yeah. How old were you then?
29.
Oh, wow. 29. You were not even 30 years old by then.
No.
Awesome.
So I moved to Northern California, became president. I spent a couple of years kind of straightening out the U.S. business. I learned a lot. I traveled a lot. I had a lot of fun. And the last 2 years with Mindynamics, years 3 and 4, I set up 5 foreign subsidiaries. Mm-hmm. So I got to travel to Europe, to Australia, to Asia, and set up these companies. The only country that I said no to was Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 4 years, the chairman's partner in the business died in a plane crash, and it broke my boss's heart. I don't have any other way to say it. They were very, very close. You know, they probably saw each other once a month, but they were just extremely close, passionate, uh-huh. passionate about the work and about what we were doing. And Alexander basically quit the business and sold his shares to the estate of his late partner, which is a business transaction I had never heard of before or since.
Oh, wow.
But the guy that died had over 30 companies that were asset rich and cash poor. We were asset poor and cash rich.
Wow.
That's the nature of a successful training business.
Yeah.
When they get big enough, you make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
And so the IRS came calling to the estate, of course. They want their money. And so they made the wise choice to buy the other 50% of Mindynamics so they would have access to the cash.
All the cash, all the dough. Yep.
Yeah, which meant that I was now reporting to the estate, the trustee of the estate.
Mm-hmm.
One of the worst experiences of my life, business life.
Who didn't know nothing about nothing? He was just your boss, that's all.
And he wants the money now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have lots of stories about that. But I treasure the 4 years working for Alexander, building Mindynamics, getting to travel as a young guy who grew up in Green Bay and had never been out of the state of Wisconsin until that kind of thing. So a wonderful, wonderful experience. And so I left Mindynamics and I launched a company called LifeSpring. And LifeSpring went on, by the way, to be to operate in 17 U.S. cities, over a 500,000 graduates of our programs. But the company did not work for me. And for people that are in business and thinking about business issues, what I learned in that experience is what I teach today. It informs my entire life. And it was essentially a failure, because after 6 months with LifeSpring, I sold the company to my staff for nothing down and forever to pay, because it didn't work for me. And what I learned there was the importance of a clearly defined and communicated purpose, vision, values, and strategic intent for any company. But I assumed that I had that in LifeSpring. And when the signs that I didn't have it showed up, I didn't know what to do. So terrific learning. The thing that I didn't mention was that after my trip to Japan, where I said no, they telephoned or faxed me every month saying, when are you coming to Japan? We want this training in Japan. And I was always with Mind Dynamics. We were busy. And also Japan is at that point time and still an extremely expensive place about space. And one of the things about the training business, we need space. We need big meeting rooms.
Right.
So I had said, and also we were super busy. And then starting LifeSpring, I'm in a startup. They kept contacting me. I said, no, you know, we're struggling with a startup here.
Yeah. Now, was LifeSpring anything like Mind Dynamics? Was it kind of modeled the same, or was it a totally different animal?
It was different in a few key ways. First of all, Mind Dynamics was 1 4-day training. And only near the end of the Mind Dynamics run did they offer a second program. With LifeSpring, we had a series. We created a series of programs. First one kind of introductory, the second one much deeper work, and the third one was a practicum where people go out and put the training to work.
I see.
Really based, frankly, on my success following the Mind Dynamics training. Okay. The other difference was that LifeSpring and subsequent work that I've done was more experiential, more learning games, simulations, conversations. It wasn't just lectures and what's generally called guided meditation. So it's much more active and frankly, much more fun, in addition to being it's a really powerful learning experience. So there were there were distinctions.
I see.
Also, we had full-time trainers. And that's all they did. Where with Mind Dynamics, they had to both enroll people in their training and teach the course, which limited it to some degree. So I sold LifeSpring. Now I'm broke. I put every cent that I had into LifeSpring. And as I mentioned, I sold it for nothing down and forever to pay. It was a classic joke.
Wow.
And they took longer. They took longer than forever to pay, but they did eventually pay me.
Was this part of your Aspen, Colorado experience?
No.
Oh,
I was living in Northern California, and I got yet another contact from Japan, and they said, look, a new offer. Come for 90 days, set up a program, and we'll pay you for 1 year. Sounded good to me. I was unemployed.
Yep.
Had a family, you know, all of that. So I went to Japan for 90 days and stayed 12 years. I formed a company called ARC International, ARC, which stood for awareness, responsibility, and communication. The three main topics of our training. And that company eventually was in 7 countries, we had seven training centers in Japan, 2 in Taiwan, 1 in Hong Kong, 1 in Manila, 1 in Seoul, Sydney, Australia, 240 people, including 70 full-time trainers, another 50 trainers on a contract basis.
Whoa, you took Asia by storm, didn't you?
We did. We brought experiential learning to Asia, which is something I'm really proud of. I mean, plenty of mistakes, plenty of being broke. You know, all of the entrepreneurial stories, we had them. But I always felt that that idea was blessed, that God wanted me to be there and God took care of us.
Because I guess
there's no other way to explain some of the things that happened, the people I attracted, the commitment that we generated. So those two companies, LifeSpring and ARC, graduated 1,300,000 people from these high impact experiential learning events for leaders.
Wow.
So hugely successful. And Russ, there's no other way to say this. So you work 7 days a week, you work long hours, you know, all of that kind of stuff, and some great stories, incredible stories, travel all over Asia and meeting great people. And out of kind of nowhere, I fell in love for the first time.
Oh my goodness. At what age?
Oh, I don't know, 40-ish.
Okay.
I haven't really thought about the age, but yeah, I think about 40.
All right.
And that motivated a move back to the U.S.
Mm.
You know, I had lived abroad for a long time. And so I moved to Colorado, built the big house in Aspen, bought a jet, you know, all of the nouveau riche things.
You're trying to impress the chick or what?
She wanted the big house. That's true.
Oh, yeah. You were trying to impress the chick.
I was trying to make her happy.
Yeah.
And I thought money would do it, you know. Turned out to not be true, but at least that's what motivated all of that. she was running back and forth. In addition to business, she was running back and forth to the state of Washington to help her parents. Mm. And then there's the mighty real motivator behind the jet was ego for me. My neighbors had a jet, so I had to have one.
Oh yeah, right.
But I had a wonderful time. I skied. We raised two birth children, two adopted special needs kids, did a lot of hiking, a lot of biking, and was on 6 nonprofit boards. Traveled for 6 months with the late John Denver, presenting a program about a sustainable future. Just incredible, incredible experiences. Became a member of the board of directors of the Desmond Tutu Peace Foundation. One of my heroes is Archbishop Tutu. I'm not Catholic, but he's one of my heroes.
All right.
And so just an incredible experience. And then in the same 90-day period, the love of my life left me for a lawyer and the top 7 people in my company spun off, started their own company in competition with me, took my graduate list, my key people with them, and created the failure of ARC International.
Wow.
I mean, I jumped back into it. I put a lot of money into it, but it was fatally wounded.
Oh,
and
boy.
So, and I went back to work. So today I wrote the book. I have a 8.5-hour audio home study program published by Nightingale Conant. I work with leaders of small to medium sized companies that are on a growth path, mentoring them, supporting them. It's a form of coaching. Serve on a couple of boards and things like that. So I'm having a lot of fun. I just confirmed this morning I am returning to Asia in May for 3 weeks to do a series of programs there. I'm excited about that. I have a lot of friends there. So So I'm the classic entrepreneur. I get excited about things. I get passionate about things, and then I go find some people that are good to help me bring it
Right.
into reality.
Yeah. I tell people that I am a hopeless entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I just love business. And, you know, the saying goes that love makes the world go around. Well, I think business does too. Without business, there's not a whole lot of stuff going on. How did you, just briefly, how did you market these training programs, Mind Dynamics and the ARC and then the LifeSpring? How did you, I mean, Mind Dynamics was already an existing concern, but you started LifeSpring, you started ARC. How did you market those to the world to get known and subsequently get people to come for the training?
Well, beginning with Mind Dynamics, which where I started as a student, I went there because a friend told me about it,
right,
and highly recommended it, and knew it was right for me. And referral selling is the answer to your question in all cases. With ARC, you know, the my biggest success, I guess, and biggest failure. It was 100% referral selling. That if people who went to the training got great value, told their friends, told their family, told their colleagues at work, and then we had a structured program to help them introduce our program to others.
I see.
So that's and how it happened.
There was some kind of a reward then for these people that would refer their friends. How did that?
The only reward was being a gift to their friends.
Okay. Just the satisfaction of knowing that they found something great and they passed it on to their friends.
I mentioned that there was this third program that was a practicum. And in that program, which was 3 weekends over a 100-day period, and then some meetings in between. You know, today those meetings would be done on Zoom, but at that time they were done in person at our training centers. And in the first weekend, what people did was to set 3 goals. First goal was personal, whatever really needed to be done in your life. And, you know, for some people that was a business goal. Some of them, it was getting all their closets cleaned out and straightening up their physical environment. Some of it was travel. Some of it was reconnecting to family members, you know, all kinds of personal goals.
Sure.
The second goal that we asked them to set was community service. Now, in America, that's usually an individual effort that somebody decides they're going to go read to children once a week at an orphanage. Another person wants to conduct programs for people in rest homes. In retirement homes. Other people want to clean up the trash along their favorite river. Lots of different things, you know.
Right.
My most recent activity was, it's the second year I did this at Thanksgiving, joining an organization that provided this year 7,000 Thanksgiving dinners in one day.
Woo!
So...
Wow.
So you'd set a goal of something, or maybe to raise some money for something, your local animal shelter. In Asia, those community service goals were always group oriented. So the entire group would take on something.
Oh.
You know, but the same goal that you have, a community service goal, something that's outside of you. The third goal was enrollment into our seminar. And our pitch was this: did you get value? Everybody says yes, or they wouldn't be there. Do you think the world would be a better place, your world, your community, and the bigger world would be a better place if everybody went through this training, got in touch with their heart's desire, got in touch with their potential, did some healing from past trauma? Would that help other people? And they all answered yes.
Oh.
And our second piece of it was, look, you've set some goals. No matter what your goals, no matter what your vision for your future, you will have to include other people.
Now, listen, folks that are listening and watching this, listen to what he's saying. Whatever you want to do, it's going to require you working with other people. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. You know, in business, that could be a supplier who gives you a little more generous payment terms. That could be a banker who provides some seed money. That could be a client, certainly. Ultimately, it could be your own staff. But it's all about enrolling other people in your dream. That's how you make progress. So, you know, we all kind of, I don't know about you, Russ, but I'll guess this is true. We grew up when selling was a bad thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it has a negative connotation.
The car salesman.
And the pressure salesman. And manipulative salesman. The first sales training class I went to, included in it was this. It was called pen handling.
Pen handling.
You know, how to get the pen from your hand into the buyer's hand.
Uh-huh.
Because to get them to sign a contract or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of manipulation, that's selling was that for many years. It's progressed so far beyond that. But
yeah,
most people have resistance to selling. Well, part of it was just changing the language. We talk not about selling, but about enrollment. And the distinction there is you're not forcing something on somebody. You're doing a process of discovery to find out what they needed. And then opening a space, in our case, for them to do the seminar. And in that program, people would set goals of two or three or four people, generally. And then during the 90 days, they'd go out and drag people down to our training center for introductory events. And sometimes they would enroll, sometimes they wouldn't. But that's what led to 1,300,000 people. And that does not include the more than 1 million people at Mind Dynamics, because I didn't set up that program. I benefited from it.
Uh-huh.
So the big competitor then and still doing great business is, at that time it was called EST. It's now called Landmark Education. And they have over 5 million graduates around the world.
Wow.
All from personal introduction. All from referral.
And what is the name of your current business?
Extraordinary People.
Extraordinary People.
And it's about exactly that, about making the breakthrough from ordinary to extraordinary.
Yep. Just takes a few things to make that step, doesn't it?
You know, if you clear away some of the head trash and start realizing that we are unique. One of my graduates, wonderful guy from India named Arjun Sen, he talks about being one of one. That we're approaching 8 billion people on the planet. And supposedly, we all have a different fingerprint.
Yeah.
Well, but it's different than just that physical fingerprint. We're each here for a unique purpose.
I believe that
down to my cellular structure.
Yep.
And so realizing that and acting on that potential, moving toward that, you know, the rules for an extraordinary life have existed for thousands of years. You know, Confucius, Jesus Christ, Lao Tzu, Norman Vincent Peale, Napoleon Hill, and Think and Grow Rich. You know, everything you would really need to know has already been developed by the great teachers throughout history.
The Bible says there's nothing new under the sun.
Exactly.
Yep. And it's just for us to find and experience for ourselves.
Yeah, and in a way we can accept and use and where it fits into our lives at the right time, the right place, and from the right teacher.
Right.
I've been blessed with great mentors personally and great coaches, great examples, incredible people that like Desmond Tutu where when you spend time with them, you are uplifted simply by being with them.
Wow. And through all of that, you've been able to be that to other people, namely these executives that you're working with now from the small to medium business community. So you're multiplying yourself, your knowledge, to these individuals. So don't stop.
I'm just not a person that can go lay on the beach.
I know. You know? Yeah.
I love working with business people. And you talked earlier about business, and I couldn't agree more. And particularly that as an agent for social change, I think business people know how to get things done. And as more and more of them really start acting in their community, and even nationally, I think they are the key to the future we all want for ourselves, for our children, for our grandchildren. That what we've learned from all of our failures and our successes, we need to take that out and amplify it in the rest of the world.
Exactly. Well said. So in closing, it is now time for you to offer some specific advice to someone who is watching or listening that might have some concerns in their life, troubles, or whatever the case may be. Maybe they've got hopefully some dreams and goals and visions and stuff. What would Robert say to those people?
Well, first of all, that a saying that I didn't invent, but I like, is that everybody wants to go to heaven. Nobody wants to die.
Yep.
You know, if you want to be more successful, and it's been proven in my life and in the lives of thousands of other people, you have to be willing to pay the price. In first of all, that mindset work, in getting support from others, and being clear about your own purpose, vision, and values, and acting in integrity with them. You know, there's some key aspects to that. The way I can contribute to you is this. I'd suggest you go to my website, which is therobertwhite.com. And under resources, you'll find a way to sign up for my free weekly e-zine. It's called An Extraordinary Minute with Robert White. I take some great ideas that and my comments about them that can be read in 1 minute or less. So it's free. You'll also receive everything in a way that I've learned about success in a free 28-page PDF. It's a shareable document. It's one of the few things where I recommend you actually print it out instead of just having it on your computer, because you can do a little self-evaluation and know where you need to focus your effort in getting better.
Exactly.
So those are two things that are free, and it gets us into relationship, and I like that a lot. You know, because now we're in touch. Now we can talk.
Right.
Now we can email back and forth or text or whatever.
Sure. And the website is therobertwhite.com?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I know you said the Robert White, and I just want to make sure there wasn't two E's there. So it's the Robert White. I bet somebody else had already taken robertwhite.com, huh?
They have, unfortunately.
Yeah, son of a gun. Yeah, that's like somebody had taken russthomas.com, so I'm russthomas.net, you know. But anyway, say... So you answered my next point, and that was, how can people get in touch with you? Through your website, that's the way to start a conversation, folks, with Robert White, to get on his website, to sign up for these little tidbits of information. Those are on a weekly basis, I understand.
For the last 12, now almost 13 years, yes.
Wow, and it just keeps spewing out of him. That's just awesome.
And if you're running a business and got a little bit of momentum and want to find out more about what I actually do, on that website, you can sign up for a free 30-minute session with me. You have to bring an issue, something specific for us to talk about. But instructions for that are on the website. There's no charge. I set aside time every week to spend time with business people, contributing whatever I can in the in those 30-minute pieces.
That's really awesome. Very awesome. So you've said a lot, you've done a lot, you're still doing a lot. And just like me, there doesn't seem to be any sign of either one of us retiring to the beach. And that's a good thing, because I think then you just kind of waste away. And when you have no purpose, no goals, it's like, why even get up in the morning? So kudos to you for continuing on and all you've accomplished. I appreciate that. So folks, just want to say, I hope you've learned a lot listening to Robert's story, where he's come from, what's happened to him in his life, what he's accomplished, things that he's learned, and what he's doing now, and how he wants to help people like yourself through some of the muck and mire of life, muck and mire of business, whatever the case may be. Go to therobertwhite.com, sign up for his newsletter, sign up for that PDF, maybe even sign up for that 30-minute session and stuff. So that's about it for today. If anything I can do for you, rstcoachingacademy.com, phone number 386-286-2450. And with that, I think we will say adieu for now and go over and out until next time. All right. Bye-bye. Hi, thanks for being here today for another episode of Money Talks. I hope it was informative and encouraging to you. If it struck a chord in your heart, or if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Visit us at rstcoachingacademy.com, call 386-286-2450, or send an email to email@rstcoachingacademy.com. Thanks again, and until next time, be great.